Thanks for listening to the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weeknight from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Eastern, 7 to 11 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every night on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon on Fox Sports Radio.
Greetings and happy Monday. Welcome inside the Jason Smith Show with my best friend, Mike Harmon, live from the Geico Studios. Action on Monday night, fast and furious throughout the NBA and the NFL. The Knicks are now within 35 of the Bucks in the fourth quarter.
Plenty of time
Watch
to close
out.
That gap. Look out.
They can cover. They can cover.
I don't even know what was this. The line on that.
35. I think that's what it was.
Well, I mean, yeah. The in-game line, I would believe.
Oh, no, yeah. No. That, well, you know what? Let's ask Josh Shaw. Let's call. Get Josh Shaw, find out what the in-game line was.
Evidently,
on
he wasn't very good at betting, so he might not have known.
The guy was gambling in the middle of games. He was gambling at halftime. He's going for the second half overs.
Yeah, we'll get to him.
Boy, do we have tons of great NFL for you tonight. Yes, the Josh Shaw Cardinals gambling story just gets weirder and weirder. We got a full week of NFL games to break down. And what we have right now, a huge game for the playoff picture in the NFC, Monday Night Football, Vikings and the Seahawks. Oh, by the way, happy. Hope you had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Oh, it was fantastic.
And you did a lot of working while I was stuck in the snow.
Did some working, rolled through some snow myself. Mm-hmm. Went and saw Aerosmith. That was awesome. Tony Braxton was on stage.
Wow. You know what? It would have been great to see Aerosmith, cool. 1988.
Hey, you know what?
That's okay.
Hell.
That's
it was still
just
a good show.
Okay.
Get out of
what
the
house. What did they do? Eight songs?
No, they did.
I'm tired. Probably, it's 10:30. Time to go to bed.
Well, we did about 15, 17 songs.
Okay.
About.
All right.
Some guitar solos, a little wing. And
all right.
And what did they do? And Heartbreaker.
Okay.
So that was good.
Heartbreaker, Brubaker, Shoemaker, won't you shine my shoes for free?
Heartbreaker from Zeppelin, but nicely done. No, it was a good show.
Right.
Entertaining. The Neon Graveyard, a little Tim Burton exhibit that they had. That was pretty cool, too. So lots of fun.
All right.
And, you know, now back here. Ready
All right.
to dominate.
Right now, 17-16. Vikings have the lead, but Rashad Penny's touchdown run has just closed that gap to a point. Extra point pending, which would tie this game up with about 9 minutes to go in the third quarter. So many playoff implications on the line in this game. You're talking about having an advantage, a big advantage in the NFC North if you're the Green Bay Packers. If the Vikings lose, a sigh of relief if you are the San Francisco 49ers. If the Seahawks lose, getting really nervous if you're the 49ers, if the Seahawks win. So these two teams who are in the thick of the best teams in the National Football League, battling it out right now. Again, 9 minutes to go in the third quarter. Again, it's moving kind of fast. 17-17 is the score. Outside of what we just saw, Penny with a touchdown run. He's got a touchdown run. Carson's got a touchdown. The play that gave the Vikings the lead is subject of a lot of scrutiny from two different angles over the course of the past half hour or so. This was 7-7 game into the second quarter when Russell Wilson makes a decidedly Russell Wilson-type play. Usually, four out of every five plays Russell Wilson likes to make like this come true and positive for the Seahawks. But once in a while, you get that fifth out of fifth that turns out like this.
Dalton fakes a handoff from the pocket, throws over the middle.
Oh,
it is caught for a touchdown by Tyler Boyd.
Jason, watch out! Carlos Dunlap's coming for you.
Yeah, that was pathetic.
I figured if I didn't mention it, we'd pretend it didn't exist.
You know, there's 14 different injuries they're listing for Sam Darnold for the coming week.
Losing
his soul was not included. Yeah. So I think they're in violation of the league's injury
but
report
hey,
policy.
Hey, what did I tell you? What did I tell you last Monday?
Oh, we said it last week.
They're going to lose to the Bengals because, like I've told you for a long time.
No, they didn't just lose.
They did. No, they did lose. We lost big.
They got their ass kicked.
We lost big. You know, if we had that pass interference call go our way at the end, oh, I'm sorry, that was the Chargers game. My fault.
At least we were in it. Your games are over at halftime.
It was over at halftime.
No, but see, that.
It was over at halftime. I don't know. What did I tell
you? You can't keep spotting people 14 points.
For years, I have told you the Jets. I've been a Jet fan, watching them play football for now almost 45 years. I watch football as very
little. That sucks for you.
I know.
It
it's
is
really
a
tough.
Long run.
You think about my life, boy.
If only
you
were a couple years older, you'd at least be able to claim a Super Bowl.
I know, right? I was born the year after they win. All right, good. Fine. Let this
Smith
kid just
was
have,
a Super Bowl baby.
Let him have some kind of horrible sports life. I've told you for over 40 years, one thing, no matter who the coach, the GM, the quarterback, anybody is, the Jets can never handle success. The minute they start playing well, they start feeling full of themselves, and they wind up falling on their faces, which is why I told you, after they were so self-satisfied with beating the Raiders last week, we're back, now we're making our big run, we're now 4-7, we got easy games coming up. I told you, they're going to lose to the Bengals, because the Jets, whatever it is, they cannot handle success. And the minute they start thumping their chest, they lose. It's like clockwork. If I bet only games I knew the Jets would lose, well, if I bet only games I knew the Jets would lose, I'd make a lot of money. Josh,
you do pretty
Shaw.
Well.
Oh, boy. But, I mean, that's something that that's why I said it on Monday. We had beat the Raiders. I said, it's okay, because you know we're going to lose to the Bengals on Sunday.
Well, Andy Dalton gets reinserted, blah. So you have that. Now it's just a question of what do they do for the rest of the year. Is it Finley again, now that they got their victory? Adams gets hurt, so you have that problem. So that's something for the final month as well.
It doesn't matter. No.
Sam Darnold was awful.
No. Just tell me.
Can I triple underscore?
No, he was okay.
He wasn't awful.
He was bad.
You can claim it all you want.
He wasn't awful. He was fine.
They scored 6 points.
I know. That was bad.
They stunk.
That was bad.
Against Cincinnati.
That was bad.
The 0-11
Bengals. No, you know why? No, I'll tell you. No, you know who was bad was Adam Gase, because this is the 32nd.
What was the Bengals' record going in?
This is the 32nd.
I forgot. What was their record?
They were not. 9-1.
No, they were a great team.
They were a juggernaut.
Kenny Anderson has been having a great season. Icky Woods has like 20 touchdowns.
You want to win, you play the Jets.
They were in some other dimension, like it was Infinity War.
Chris Collinsworth is playing well. I mean, this is a good Bengals team. No, the 32nd ranked team against the run, and they run Le'Veon
Raggedy
Bell nine
Andy
times.
Carved you up like turkeys.
I mean, nine times. Adam Gase is awful. This is him back to being stubborn.
But they were expecting
I'm just going to throw the football. No.
That's your coach.
He's terrible.
But they were 32nd. They were expecting the run.
Tell me again,
so he thought he'd surprise.
Tell me again how great it's going to be with him, really. Tell me how everything is fine. He's the solution.
The next
for the
10
Jets.
Years are going to be great with him.
Oh, wait till we trade him to you for Anthony Lynn. I'll do that in a second.
Oh, you can't have Anthony Lynn.
but. All right, now we really need the pick six. All right, so this is a 17-17 game, as we told you. 9 minutes to go in the third quarter. Vikings and the Seahawks. This play getting a lot of run for a couple of different reasons.
Second and goal from the 5. Two receivers go out to the left. Dalton catches a shotgun snap. He hands it off to Mixon, and Joe Mixon charges straight ahead and takes it into the end zone. Touchdown, Bengals.
Damn.
They only had a couple of touchdowns, so we're almost out of highlights, I would guess. We're almost out of highlights.
I don't know. That Joe Mixon one is so rare.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like finding the Easter egg buried inside a
We got the safety.
Movie.
Play this. May as well play the safety. Got the safety?
No, we stopped rolling
play
on the game after
play
that.
Play the
TD.
Safety.
No, you want it. I don't want it now.
All right, so this play by Russell Wilson, and only Russell Wilson, gave the Vikings a 14-7 lead.
Russell Wilson facing a blitz, straight drop. Ball's batted in the air. Intercepted. Yes. Defensive touchdown. Minnesota Vikings. It's Anthony Harris. Well done, young man.
Vikings Radio Network on the call. A pass that is tipped at the line of scrimmage, batted by Russell Wilson. It's picked off and run in for a touchdown. I watched this replay 10 times, and I know that already the play-by-play, and we'll get to Booger McFarland in a second, are talking about how always trying to make the right play, batting the ball down, and it winds up batting it forward. No, I would bet all the money in my pocket, and I have like $16 in my pocket. Russell Wilson was trying to make a Russell Wilson play and batting it all the way out to Hollister. Because if you see the replay from the backside, Hollister looks like he's standing all alone. Wilson just bats it to the side. Watch him bat the ball. That's not how you bat the ball if you're trying to bat the ball down.
He looked like he was trying to spike it like a volleyball, right?
He gets
some distance
up. You see the way, if you're trying to knock a ball down, your motion is going down with your hands. Yeah. He was going up to bat that forward because he thought, I can make a cool MVP-type play, which is what Russell Wilson likes to do all the time, and I'm going to bat it to my fullback. Nope. That's exactly what that was. He was not trying to bat it down. He was trying to bat it forward to him. It winds up bouncing off his hand and to the right, where it's then picked off and run in for a touchdown. All $16 I would bet that he was trying to bat it forward.
He'll never admit it,
but I guarantee you that's
what he did. And it's going to be, that's the moxie and hero play of Russell Wilson, because he doesn't give up on it. So, no, I think exactly as you described, because from several of the camera angles, it looks like Hollister is all by himself, and you don't see the defender that can slide. I mean, there's plenty of room because we're talking about batting it, what, 12 yards?
Yep.
Or thereabouts, maybe a little bit further. Not going to happen. Doesn't get it cleanly. You have the pick six. And let's face it, you got a lot of narratives going on in this game just with the quarterbacks. Forget about the teams and where they're at in the playoffs. Russell Wilson and the MVP talk, and he walks on water for most media members. On the other side, you've got Kirk Cousins, who's winless on Monday Night Football, trying to erase some of those ills of primetime games. They beat the Cowboys a couple of weeks ago. He's had a fantastic five-game run, and now it looks like, you know, as we go forward here, middle of the third quarter, that he might be without a couple of his weapons here, Jason. On the previous possession, Dalvin Cook goes to run, gets the ball punched out by Green. He's being helped to the locker room right now. And on the play as well, Stephon Diggs got rolled up, so he's getting medical attention as well. So all of a sudden, things got really strange.
It got real serious in one play.
For the Vikings. They lose the ball on a turnover, and their two best offensive weapons are out of the game, at least for a while here.
Yeah, we're watching Dalvin Cook go to the locker room now. Stephon Diggs is at least walking on the sideline. He did get rolled up on, it looked like, accidentally as the ball popped out and the Seahawks recovered it. But Dalvin Cook, it looks like, yeah, we're not going to see him for quite a while. A big turn of events right there for the Minnesota Vikings. But let's look at this touchdown we just talked to you about.
Oh, sure, sure.
From the perspective of ESPN Monday Night Football analyst Booger McFarland. Remember, this is a Vikings pick six that the Vikings go in for a touchdown to take the lead. And it's a very fluky play. As we say, you know, Wilson is batting the ball up. You don't see plays like this. And Booger McFarland wanted to make sure that he really didn't know a lot about NFL history.
Well, these are the type of plays that historically have gone against the Vikings. The Minneapolis Miracle. Plays that are fluke plays that went against this team. I'm sure Vikings fans are saying it's about time we get one of these plays to go our way.
Yes, yes. Let's listen to the Minneapolis Miracle and how that cost the Vikings a chance to play in the NFC Championship.
Vikings at their own 39. It's third down. Three receivers right, field, and left. Marshawn Lattimore, 12 yards from Adam. Case on a deep drop. Steps up in the pocket. He'll fire to the right side. Caught by Diggs. Stay
up! Oh, my God! Oh, my God!
And the Saints somehow find a way to win that game. The Minneapolis Miracle really helps them. You know, the Saints go on to another Super Bowl.
Well, I mean, they got all the calls. Everything went the Saints' way. I mean, this was the beginning of a great... Oh, unless it wasn't.
I mean, Booger McFarland, I'll say the same thing that I've said before about the ESPN Monday Night Football broadcast. It just sounds like any other broadcast, right? It's not terrible. It just sounds like it can be any game. It could be a Pac-12 after dark game. It could be a Sunday afternoon Arizona Cardinals, San Francisco 49ers game. But dude, ESPN pays $100 million for each Monday night game. This guy's on Monday Night bleeping football. And I get if you're trying to say something that is very obtuse and obscure from like 1955. Well, remember when this happened and Wrong Way Regals ran for a touchdown, which is earlier than the 50s. But this is the Minneapolis Miracle that happened 2 years ago that the Vikings won. I mean, the Vikings won. It was Keenum. It was Stephon Diggs. And he goes on this whole thing about saying how the Vikings usually are on the other end of this thing, like the Minneapolis Miracle. It's about time they get one to go their way. I mean, did you really not remember that it was the Vikings that wound up winning like this?
Yeah, specificity usually gets you a win.
I mean, this is Monday Night Football.
And sports talk radio. But, you know, get the particulars right.
This is Monday Night Football. And you're talking about, I mean, I was waiting for him to say, and you know the Seahawks, who can forget when they won their second straight Super Bowl because Bill Belichick decided to throw the football on the goal line instead of handing the ball to LeGarrette Blount. Had a lot of touchdowns that season, LeGarrette Blount.
Patriots have any more Monday night games?
Oh,
maybe we can get that one.
I mean, it's Monday Night Football.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Russell Wilson tonight for the Seattle Seahawks had another very nice game. Tonight he threw for 240 yards, got the team in the end zone a couple of times, also made a ridiculously stupid play by trying to bat a ball that he threw to a receiver instead of to the ground. It resulted in a pick six for the Vikings. But, you know, four out of every five Russell Wilson plays, four are genius. One is, oh my God, what are you doing? But because it's Monday Night Football and the Seahawks win again and they are now in first place in the NFC West, they have the tiebreaker with the win over the 49ers, it's the is Russell Wilson the MVP debate. And what I'm going to tell you now is really going to show you that when it comes down to it, there's a guy having a year at quarterback and there's a guy having a not so good a year. Not as good a year as the other one. Lamar Jackson is getting all the run, and rightfully so. Russell Wilson, who for years could have been the MVP in the NFL, and maybe could he get one this year because of a some sort of lifetime achievement award? Sure. But Lamar Jackson is much more valuable and is doing more than Russell Wilson. All I need to tell you is this. Tonight, Wilson threw for 240. They ran for 218. Last week against Philadelphia, Wilson threw for 200. They ran for 174. The Seahawks running game is phenomenal. You heard Pete Carroll talk about it. Doesn't matter who starts. We feed the hot hand. Some nights it's Chris Carson having a big night like he did tonight. Sometimes both running backs have a big night like they did tonight when they run for over 200 yards. The Seahawks are sixth overall in rushing in the National Football League, right? Because of what Carson and Penny are able to do out of the backfield. Right? That they are sixth. Here's how Lamar Jackson's the MVP. Who's the number one rushing team in the NFL? The Baltimore Ravens. The only team running for over 200 yards a game. So you say, wait a minute. The Baltimore Ravens rushing game is way better than the Seahawks rushing game. Jason, what are you saying? 977 of those yards are because of Lamar Jackson. If you take Lamar Jackson out of the equation, the Ravens drop to 10th in the NFL running the football, which is still pretty good, but it's not the overall dominant running for 200 yards a game because Lamar Jackson is averaging 81 yards a game on the ground. So when you realize that both these teams have really good have good rushing offenses, but Lamar Jackson is doing that much more just running the football, how is it not Lamar Jackson that's the MVP right now? Like, forget about the sexiness and the shiny new toy, and that's Lamar Jackson. Everybody loves saying things about him. The Ravens are the favorite right now to go to the Super Bowl, and I get that whole part of it because that's what it's about. But in the end, there's two guys having great years. Lamar Jackson's just having a better year than Russell Wilson. So if you're saying one quarterback is having a better year than another quarterback, then it can't be between two quarterbacks for the MVP. It's got to be between this quarterback, who is the best at his position, and somebody else.
He's transcending the position, right? We're talking about the quarterback in different terms. We did it a little bit with Patrick Mahomes last year, but even to him, it was more get to the outside. He didn't run a lot. He just created time, and then the speedsters downfield made big plays. Travis Kelce would make a big play. You'd hit one of the running backs out of the backfield for a big completion en route to that massive output. For Lamar Jackson, the way they're running this offense, look, his passing numbers aren't much different than where Russell Wilson is. Like, that's the thing to also go through. You could say, okay, yeah, he's got 600 more passing yards. Well, Lamar Jackson's got 600 more rushing yards and twice as many rushing touchdowns. Their passing touchdowns and interception, basically a wash. But Baltimore averaging 5 points per game, more than any other team in the AFC, and running roughshod over all these opponents. And the defense has come to play, and they've gotten better as the year went on. They solidified the secondary, and Marcus Peters has been a good addition. But you look at Humphrey and whatever. On that side of the ball, they've gotten it done. But they've already scored over 400 points. And for Lamar Jackson, trying to, quote, solve him is a day like Sunday. You'll sign up for that all day long, right? If he doesn't have to pass for 300 yards, but can run for 100, find his way into the end zone, and keep you on your toes with the option game and Mark Ingram and a sledgehammer, that's winning football. And right now with Lamar Jackson, everybody's trying to figure out how to best that formula. The rest of them are traditional offenses. Russell Wilson's a fantastic player. Lifetime achievement's not coming this year. That comes when you've got four or five guys where you go, nah. No, we're talking about record-setting stuff. You've talked about Michael Thomas a bunch and maybe getting to 150 receptions, the fact that it was between Breeze and Teddy Bridgewater, right? You're spanning two quarterbacks to get to that number without a true number two. Alvin Kamara missed a couple of games. You had Latavius Murray stand in. But Jared Cook is, I guess, the best number two wide receiver slash tight end that they have. And it's a far cry because he'll have a big game and then he'll disappear just as fast. They expected more from Tre'Quan Smith. He's been banged up a bunch, hasn't been able to be there. Ted Ginn Jr. had a couple of big games, but he disappears just like he has his entire career as a receiver as fast as he shows up. You still have to account for him, right? Yeah. But it doesn't necessarily show up in the box score is the point I'm trying to make. So you've got Thomas, who's doing ridiculous things, and you've got Lamar Jackson, who's just got everybody with their jaw dropping, trying to figure out what he's going to do next.
Yeah, I mean, the more time goes on, the more distance there is between Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson for MVP, because we're still wowing at the things that Lamar Jackson is doing. Russell Wilson, well, we've seen it. It doesn't take away from his greatness and how great he is, but you're talking about splitting hairs between these two guys, and as time goes on, that gap is widening between Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson. Twitter at How About a Fresca. Mike at Swollen Dome. One more thing from the game. Dalvin Cook, who injured his shoulder tonight, look, we told you, the Vikings are going to be fine. They lose this game tonight. They're still one of the best teams in the NFC.
Three of their final four games at home.
They are just fine. But if Dalvin Cook misses time with an injured shoulder, which is what happened to him tonight in the second half, then that changes things, because borderline, he was an MVP candidate for the first 10 games of the season this year. But you have a report that Dalvin Cook thinks he's going to be okay for this weekend.
Yeah, from Ben Gosling from the Star Tribune in Minnesota. Said he got hit in the chest where he'd sustained an injury against the Broncos, but added that he could have gone back into the game, saying he sat for precautionary reasons. He said he'll be good to go for Detroit. So folks are pointing to, well, then in the final series, right, then he should have been back out there, right? It's a one-score game. They'd probably already decided when it looked right, when it was a two-score game and it looked like it was dead and they were moving the ball before the Metcalf fumble, that suddenly maybe that changed the game, but they'd already made the decision that, all right, he was done. Or maybe also just for the long-term play of just trying to end the speculation about his health, right? Because as we've talked about over the course of the night and over the course of the season, he's a fantastic talent and a guy that every time he touches the ball, it's must-watch TV because you don't know whether he's going to break it as a runner or a receiver. But he hasn't been able to stay healthy in his young NFL career. So maybe this statement is also a bit of, I'll be back, I'll be ready, just let's not make that the narrative going into the Detroit game.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific.
The big story of the day in the NFL was, once again, what's wrong with the Patriots offense? Look, we told you months ago, the Patriots offense stinks. It's not going to get any better. No one's coming to the rescue. All of these talking points you heard all day today, we've told you a month ago. This Patriots offense is not good. It's not good at all. Tom Brady last night was seen on TV during the game, tearing into his receivers, something you probably saw many times on social media now, by telling them they have to play faster, quicker, more explosive.
That's the worst criticism. If that's the worst thing Tom Brady said to his receivers,
I don't think it is.
He should get a medal.
I think that's what's on camera.
No, but that's what's being said,
I want a bad lip reading on that. I want that. Rats! I got rats. Who wants rats?
But from this became the firestorm. Look at him getting after his receivers. Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah.
He's saying we have to play with direction and purpose.
I get it.
Almost Will Ferrell in underwear saying he's got to keep his composure.
But look, there's things about Tom Brady that I have known for years. One of them is that when he gets pressured, he throws the ball low and early. And that's how you get to Brady and force him to have bad games. Now, he's not that guy anymore. But what else he also does is every time the Patriots offense is struggling, they're not playing well. Shockingly, he is seen on camera during the game yelling at his offensive players. It's not my fault. You guys got to do this. It's happened so many times for it to be a coincidence. I mean, yes, this is him saying faster, quicker, more explosive. Like they're not running as fast as they can. They're not doing things. They're just laying it up.
That's
really
just motivational speaking.
You're laying things up in New England. You can get away with that.
I mean,
New England,
you got to be faster and more explosive. And what do you tell me? You tell me to beat it.
No,
I'm trying to coach you up just like Tom Brady.
Number one, Mr. Belichick, you're not my coach. Number two, I had a good first step. I don't have it anymore. All right?
That was gone.
I've been robbed.
Yeah, someone took that away, like your wallet a while ago. But yeah. with Tom Brady, this is much ado about nothing.
No, this is Tom Brady in full protect the brand mode because he wants to keep playing after this year. And the worse year he has, the tougher it is for teams to go, yeah, I'm going to go sell out to get Tom Brady and bring him in and give him a 5-year deal to come play here, whether it's Chicago or someplace else, because Brady is not producing. He's not playing well. And you can't tell me that this is all on Tom Brady's wide receivers. Tom Brady has gotten it done for years with subpar wide receivers. He won a Super Bowl with David Givens as his best wide receiver. Okay? He has won with Randy Moss for a couple of years. Wes Welker for a couple of years. He's won with Rob Gronkowski. He's won without Rob Gronkowski. He has won with good players. He has won without good players on offense. How are the Patriots still doing this? Look how great Tom Brady is. But now he's 42, and the supporting cast, which is the same as it was at different points during his career, now suddenly it's not enough for him. And he's not as accurate with the football as he can be. The only thing that would save the Patriots is an influx of talent at wide receiver and running back. Guys that can get separation, guys where if Brady is off a little bit with the football, they can bail him out. But they don't have any of those players. And Tom Brady really wants to keep playing, and every week that goes by where he stinks is a bad week for him for teams to say, yeah, we want to go out and get Tom Brady after this year. He is in full protect the brand mode. He knows when the camera's on him. He knows when he's going to be saying things. People are going to say things. And shockingly, every time they play poorly, we see it. He's yelling at his teammates because, hey, it's not my fault. All right, I'm trying to get another big contract here. I've won Super Bowls. I'm down 14 points. You fix this, referees. I mean, this is really where Tom Brady is. And this is out of his playbook 150%.
I like that you dialed up a fix this, referees. That was funny. Look, when we go through the entirety of this offense, and it's not to say he's not declining. He's 42. Okay, I just don't think it's as precipitous as it's being made out to be, but it's the pass that Pinata goes to him, right? The young guys have all gotten beaten up a bit, right? Mitchell Trubisky and everybody else, we've gone after those guys. Now it's, all right, Tom Brady, they're 10-2, but let's go after him. 18 touchdowns, 6 picks, and yes, obviously the 2 touchdowns in garbage mode in the Sunday night loss. He's still 5th in yardage in the National Football League. There are a couple of concerning stats. I mentioned Mitchell Trubisky. He's got a higher completion percentage than Brady does at this point. Brady sitting at a tie for 29th with his 61.1%. You're talking about 6.7 yards per attempt. That is tied for 26th. So, yeah, there's some things there. You're also talking about a lot of young wide receivers, guys that aren't part of the program, so to speak, trying to get N'Keal Harry, who missed half the season on the right page. Jacoby Myers comes in and has one or two great sequences, and then he's out of sorts and not coming back for the ball. And you've had Julian Edelman, right? Gronk is a first ballot Hall of Famer, or should be, right? Based on what he did in that offense and what he meant to this team, both as a receiver and blocker. So you lose him as a blocker. So your run game, that offensive line is the worst that they've had probably in a decade.
It's been better the past few weeks. It's improved the past few weeks.
But not enough to generate anything off the run game. Sony Michel was a 1,000-yard guy a year ago.
Yeah, but this is a Patriots team that for years has overcome that. They've overcome not having Rob Gronkowski. They've overcome not having these players. And now suddenly they can't, and the one constant is Tom Brady. Look, he's in full protect the brand mode. Well, however much you want to lay at his feet, quarterbacks get all the credit and they get all the blame. And perception is reality. Perception is Tom Brady stinks. The reality is Tom Brady's one of the bottom third quarterbacks in the NFL this year. I mean, that's what he is so far.
3 touchdowns to 1 interception.
In garbage time.
In garbage time. This past week.
Garbage time.
Listen, Sam Darnold can't find an open receiver.
Hey, you know, it's not about Sam Darnold. It's not about Sam Darnold. I had a very tough Bengals defense.
Trying to help you out there to put it in perspective. But, you know, for Brady, yes, there's erosion. But this is the week, I think, that everybody that's been the Tom Brady's declining for 7 or 8 years, this is the one that they're jumping up and down on the grave after the second loss of the year.
Be sure to catch live editions of the Jason Smith Show with Mike Harmon weekdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
CBS Sports NFL insider extraordinaire, friend of the show, Jason Lockenfor. What's happening, Jay?
I'm taking this all in like you guys. This has been quite an evening. More than I think any of us bargained for on multiple levels.
I mean, this game has been insane. Look, the Seahawks blow all their timeouts. They get really lucky on the no pass interference call on Flowers interception. It's been one of those typical Seattle primetime games.
Yeah, right. It's always kind of wacky when they play. We can go back to the I'm trying to think of the replacement. Easley? It wasn't Kenny Easley, the stud safety for Lance Easley. Remember the replacement official on the Monday night game?
Right.
With Aaron Rodgers, yeah. And that was pretty much the end of the replacement officials. And, right? That was in Seattle in prime time. Crazy stuff happens. I feel like Seattle was the better team, and really, at one point, it went from being 17-10 to 34-17, and it looked like they might blow them out of the arena, and that didn't happen, and kudos, you know, to the Vikings for fighting back, but I think the better team is prevailing here. Although I'm pretty high on Minnesota, and I picked them to win that division, and this will be a tough loss for them. But they're certainly still in the driver's seat for a wild card spot, and I wouldn't hand that north to Green Bay just yet.
Well, that's the one thing coming out of this game. Yeah, the Vikings will be 8-4, and everything is still fine. They've proven they're one of the best teams in the NFC. But Dalvin Cook, who's got a problem staying healthy, goes out of this game with a shoulder injury. And if there's no Dalvin Cook, that makes things really tough for the Vikings.
Yeah, and they lost their left tackle as well. And, you know, it's for a couple weeks now, it's looked like Adam Thielen might be able to come back, and he hasn't been able to. So those would all be troubling signs. For sure, and I think Minnesota at home they're pretty dominant. On the road, it's a little different. The defense isn't nearly as airtight on the road as at home. I think the fast track, the climate controlled conditions, especially when they have Diggs and Thielen, and now Rudolph's come on in the second half of the year, and obviously Dalvin Cook's a speed guy. You know, when they're able to have all those guys, and you know it's going to be 70 degrees and perfect conditions and no wind and an artificial surface, then they're kind of at their best. But when they have to go in a situation like this, Seattle, there are some conditions. It is a hostile environment. You aren't in a dome. They tend to come up a little short. But look, the NFC is loaded. I mean, that postseason is going to be not that the AFC won't be fun also, but, boy, the NFC, there's a lot of really good football teams.
Jason, we got a lot of fun this final month coming up, right? 64 more games to go, but the NFL now has themselves a little bit of something to investigate with this Josh Shaw incident, defensive back violating the gambling policy, a three-team parlay. Nicely done. That includes his team he lost. But I actually, on the application, listed professional football player. So how pervasive do you think this is? How much is the NFL nervous about this, given all their new relationships in this arena?
Yeah, look, they're certainly sending a stern message here that we are monitoring this stuff, and we do know what goes on, and we will throw the book at you. And it's, you know, look, it's a little easier to throw the book at, you know, an injured reserve defensive back who nobody's ever really heard of than if it was a modern-day version of the Paul Hornung scandal, you know what I mean, and somebody that prominent and that impactful. But look, they doesn't matter how many states legalize this stuff, and it doesn't matter how mainstream and commonplace it becomes. It's going to always be on the first page of every standard player contract that you can't bet on football games, and it's going to always be enforced through 10,000 employees. I mean, it's not just players, it's coaches, it's people in the front office. It goes all the way down to the guys who work the chain gang, you know, on the field, down in distance. This policy applies to 10,000 people, and it's not going to change. And the league, I think, over time, will certainly invest even more in NFL security and other measures where you know, they are sort of policing this and looking out for any suspicious activity. And you guys alluded to it. We're not far off from the league wholeheartedly embracing gambling and the money that comes from gambling in terms of team sponsorships, in terms of league-wide sponsorships, in terms of eventually probably betting parlors in stadiums, teams having a hand in gambling apps. That's where this thing is trending, and you can't have any remote possibility of impropriety, right? Everything has to be as clean as it can possibly be. And I don't know how prevalent it is. I suspect not very. But it only takes, you know, one person, you know, one coach, one player, one referee, one, you know, whatever, to affect an outcome. So I do believe this is something that the league will continue to pour a lot of resources into trying to prevent.
Now, testing your powers and knowledge as an insider, do you know if he hit the parlay?
Well, if his team was a part of it, probably not.
Yeah, no, I think it lost. It was a second half spread with the game against Tampa, so I think it blew up on him.
Okay, Jason. I will take your word for it, but. Yeah, there's no winners in this scenario.
Oh, now that's a great segue to our next topic. Nick Foles and the Jacksonville Jaguars. They decide to go to Gardner Minshew for the rest of the season, which is fine. He provided a spark. The league caught up to him a bit. Maybe now with some time sitting, he'll be able to play good. But $88 million they gave to Nick Foles, that's a lot of money.
Really,
what do they do?
It's 2 for $50, and they trade him for pennies on the dollar. Look, I don't know who they were bidding against. They weren't competing with anybody other than their own inflated version of what they thought their team was and how close they thought they were to winning anything. They weren't even close to winning a division title, much less anything real. But there's always a way out, and there's going to be major changes there. We're looking at a new coaching staff. We're looking at a new front office. I don't see Tom Coughlin sticking around for what looks like now to be, a fairly arduous rebuild and not what he signed up for. It's going to come down to what these new evaluators and coaches think about the roster. I can't imagine them thinking, yeah, let's keep rolling with Foles. I think you get a lot of your cap, you know, dead cap and cap hits out of the way in 2020. You try to get younger and accrue as many draft picks as you possibly can. And even if you have to eat some money to trade Foles, hey, that's part of the business. I just don't know why they sat Minshew in the first place. I mean, I understand he had a really bad game against the Texans in London in some weird situations when he knew he was playing for, you know, his starting job. But he's the reason they were 4-4. Like, it's not like they were 4-4 because, oh, my God, we built this monster roster. But the quarterback keeps holding us back. Like, man, if we could only get a game manager in there. The dude was on pace for 4,000-yard season. He was top 12 rated quarterback in the league, and he had the fourth best TD to INT ratio in the NFL going into that game in London, and he had one bad game, and they couldn't wait to put him on ice for a guy who had barely practiced with this team, much less played with them. And let's face it, Nick Foles, if you need a guy to like navigate a really good team for a month, he can do it. If you need a guy to like carry a team for 17 weeks, he will break down. He will break down quickly, and you know, that's the reality there. So can they pawn him off somewhere at the combine, you know, if they eat, you know, $7, $8 million of salary? Maybe, but I don't see where they're going to go with Nick Foles anytime soon. I would get rid of him.
Either way, both quarterbacks failed fantasy owners by not getting DJ Chark involved against a bad Tampa secondary this week. Tom Brady, the shovels are out. People have them loaded with dirt, and they're ready to dump into his grave. You got any hot takes you want to fire off in his direction?
No, I mean, look, they are a limited offensive football team. I think we've talked about it a lot this year. You know, they're just in keep it simple, stupid mode. Don't get the quarterback killed. We can't. Any play that requires a 5 or 7 step drop probably isn't going to work. We can throw some occasional bombs just for the hell of it, but you know, it's unlikely that Dorsett runs under that, and if he doesn't, nobody else will. He trusts two guys. He trusts Edelman and he trusts White. And you know, one guy runs wheel routes and the other guy, you know, runs, you know, 8 to 12 yard routes in the seam, and that's all they can depend on in their passing game. And could the offensive line get a little better down the stretch as it gets healthier? Maybe, but they only run for 3 yards per carry, and their two best blocking tight ends from a year ago are gone, and you're running out of time. So if they have to play from behind, it's not going to be pretty. I think the one situation I would just still keep an eye on is if enough people in that organization get Robert Kraft's ear, does he eventually say, okay, in pursuit of number 7, let's just go bring Antonio Brown back? Because the one thing people in that organization will tell you is the limited time he was there, and not just in that one game, he clicked with Brady immediately. He made a difference in how people had to defend them. He opened things up, and he and Tom were simpatico immediately. And, you know, with Tom maybe having some wanderlust at this point and maybe looking at life outside of New England, it might not be the worst idea in the world to go add an outside receiver for him and try to, you know, salvage what you can offensively.
You can follow him on Twitter at JasonLockin4. That is at JasonLockin4, who is actually buying his Super Bowl tickets for the Ravens as we speak. Jay, as always, buddy, appreciate it, my friend. We'll talk to you next week.
You got it, guys. Have a good one.
Be good.